I was going to fill in. We had a weird quarter anyway. It was just going to be 2 months because we had Doug go a little extra because of things that went on in his quarter, and Jody starts June, right? And so we had this 2 month, and this 2 months has been an event for me. So it's been the most sporadic scenario. But we'll keep moving through. At some point, I'll probably just pick this up in a quarter because I haven't been able to cover that much. But I wanted to study lessons that we can learn from Peter. And I knew the last time I taught that I had more than 1 week's worth of material. And so I want to finish that up. We're going to finish that one up about suggesting to you about six levels of faith. And in John 6, 41 through 71 was our text at that time, where they were having a hard time understanding what Jesus was saying, and many of the disciples left him. They walked away, and it says, and they followed him no more. And Jesus looked at the 12 and said, are you also going to leave? And Peter said, Lord, where would we go? He said, we have come to believe and to know that you are the Christ, that you are the Son of the living God. All right, and once you know that, it's pretty hard to walk away from Jesus, because there's nowhere else to go. You know what you're walking away from, and you're very consciously stepping away. And that's actually why some of the other passages say that when one comes to know and they walk away, that's a tough situation as a Christian, because there's nothing left for you. You've experienced Jesus and it wasn't enough. And so we started talking about these levels, about at some point, you know, we're all unaware of Jesus. We're unaware of him. And through various means, it's pretty hard to live, at least in the United States and in most countries, without hearing that there's somebody that believes in this guy called Jesus. I mean, it's pretty hard to get through this life without hearing the name Jesus. I mean, if nothing else, it's, what's this Christmas thing about? Well, there's these people over here, and or kind of mean, you know, people celebrate this, or what's Easter about? Well, you know, that's when they... I mean, it's pretty hard to get through this life and be completely clueless that there's some people who believe in a man called Jesus and that he was the Son of God, okay? So at some point, you have to kind of move to aware that there's this man that people call Jesus, and even historically, yeah, he may have been here and he showed up. And you know, I know some people say he's the Son of God. You know, people say, I'm agnostic, I don't know, maybe he was, maybe he wasn't. But you move from unaware to aware. We looked at Philip with the Ethiopian eunuch, if you remember. And Philip was sent to him. And when Philip found him there in the chariot, Philip asked him what question?
Do you understand?
Do you understand what you're reading? And what did the eunuch tell him?
How can I unless someone guide me?
Yeah, how can I unless someone teach me and guide me? And so Philip jumped up in the chariot with him and taught what to him?
Jesus.
He taught him about Jesus. And so he taught him about Jesus. So at that time, the eunuch was aware of Jesus, but he didn't understand Jesus. And he didn't understand the gospel and what that meant. But he was searching. Philip taught him Jesus, and then later we saw, as they were riding along in the chariot, what did the eunuch ask him? What did he see? What did the eunuch see? He said water, and he said, he goes, then why should I not be baptized, right? I mean, clearly he taught him about baptism. I mean, he moved him from even unaware about baptism, unaware of the story of Jesus, and gave him understanding to where he's like, well, here's water, then should I not be, what would stop me then from being baptized? Because clearly that's something that's important. And what did Philip tell him?
If you believe, you may.
If you believe with all of your heart, you may. He said that Jesus Christ is the Son of God. That's what you have to understand the story of Jesus. You don't have to understand everything in Revelation. You don't have to understand, you know, all of this, everything about Christ. It takes a lifetime and we still don't understand. Right? Everything. But you have to understand the gospel plan of salvation, right? You have to just understand enough to say, I believe that there is a man named Jesus, and I believe that he is the Son of God. And if you're willing to confess that, and that you understand that, and that you need to be baptized for the remission of your sins, that's enough to get you started.
Well, there's a difference between believing and knowing. There's a lot of people who know and understand what's taught. They just don't believe it. The people who saw Jesus raise Lazarus from the dead, there were those that believed, and those that acknowledged the facts of what they saw, but had no faith generated. And so understanding requires not only the knowledge, but actually a acceptance of the consequences of that knowledge.
Yeah, and I don't want to get into a semantics. I agree with everything you just said. I'm going to use knowing just slightly different than just knowledge. Okay, for me, just knowledge, I'm holding here. Okay, and we can, you know, this is why people talk. Why are they preaching in the synagogue, right? People talked among themselves and they tried to figure it out. So, but for me, and the way I use that is, I can understand the example I've used before. I can understand your position on abortion. I can understand it. I mean, I can even tell it back to you. I could write it down and say, this is exactly what you believe. Is that not right? And you'd say, yeah, that's what I believe. It doesn't mean that I believe it.
That's right.
Right, but I can understand it. I have the knowledge, the understanding of where you are. The eunuch, he said, I do believe that Jesus Christ is the Son of God. Yeah. And then when he believed, he was moved to what?
An action faith.
And we talked last time, because there are those who believe in what? They don't act. It says that even the devils believe, right? The devils believe and tremble. I mean, not only do they understand, I mean, this is a tormented place to be. People who understand it, they understand it, they even believe it, but there is something, well, my family member, if I act, that means this. And emotionally, I can't accept that. Right? I mean, you're tormented.
But knowing in the way you've got it written to me says, once you know all that, you act on it. That puts it all in one nutshell. You followed everything. It's not knowing and not believing, or not knowing and not reacting. That's knowing and understanding what you do and doing it.
Okay. Ron?
I have a question. I don't know how you meant it, but the 12 apostles, when they left Jesus, you know, they went through the stages, probably to the word number four, believing. And following Jesus, they couldn't take action because they're still learning from what Jesus gave to them. So now they're thinking in their heads, as far as I'm concerned, what better way to show what they've learned from him? But like he was just saying, they know and believe everything that they've done and followed Jesus. Now they've got to take action. And what better way to do it is go out to different places and start spreading the word of God. You know, and that's the way I take it. I don't know if that's, you know, we're always going to learn every day from somebody that has more wisdom and knowledge than we do. And what better way to do that is to go out in the world and share it with everybody.
Yeah, they should. Now, in John, the disciples that left weren't the 12. And the disciples that left were literally disciples. They were followers. And they didn't leave to go teach. They left. It says, and they, you know, followed him no more, it said. Right, they couldn't understand it. They said, this is too hard to understand, and they left. But in concept, what you said, I believe, is correct, right? People, they go, and that is part of their action, is that you go and teach. Okay, I'm just trying to catch us up to kind of where we were, because the actual distinction that I'm trying to make, or that I want us to consider, we never got to. So let's talk about action for just a minute. James 1, if you'll turn there. This is why action is important. James 1, 22 through 25. What does that say?
But be ye doers of the word and not hearers only, deceiving your own selves. For if any be a hearer of the word and not a doer, he is like unto a man beholding his natural face in a glass. For he beholdeth himself and goeth his way, and straightway forgetteth what manner of man he was.
Okay. And there's several verses around this, before it, after, that just keeps reiterating the point over and over and over, that you can't just be a hearer, you have to be what?
A doer.
A doer. So you can hear, you can understand even, you can even believe, but you have to do, right? Doing is important. We know, we talked about this one, John 14:15, Jesus says, if you love me, you'll what? You'll keep my commandments. You're going to act. I mean, if you love me, you will act. You won't just believe in me. You will move to action. You have to do. James 2, if you just flip over another chapter, James 2:14-17, what does that say? James 2:14-17.
What doth it profit, my brethren, though a man say he hath faith and have not works? Can faith save him? If a brother or sister be naked and destitute of daily food, and one of you say unto them, depart in peace, be ye warmed and filled, notwithstanding ye give them none of these things which are needed to be to the body, what doth it profit? Even so faith, if it hath not works, is dead, being alone.
Right? You have to act. So he says, even faith, if it hath not works, if it doesn't have action, it's dead, being alone. Getting to this point, being alone is not enough. You have to move to a faith that's a faith of action. And we talked about, you know, when you look at Mark 16:16, that says what? He that believeth and is baptized shall be saved. You can believe, and the action of baptism, it is the symbol, it is a demonstration of your belief. But when you believe and you act, you are saved. Okay. So an action faith is where we all need to be. Then I look around this room and I see a bunch of brothers and sisters who have action faith. I mean, I see action faith all across. This is a congregation of people who act on their faith in so many different ways. Jody?
Unfortunately, a lot of people have good intentions. They know, they plan, they think, but they never actually accomplish anything. Good intentions will not get you the reward. You have to put the intentions that you know are right into practice. In Romans chapter 6, it says, I thank God that you were the servant of sin, but you have obeyed that form of teaching. Obedience is the requirement for
salvation. That's right. We have to obey. Look at 2 Kings 5. If you turn to 9, 2 Kings 5, 9. I'll read here just a few verses. Then Naaman went with his horses and chariot, and he stood at the door of whose house?
Elisha.
And Elisha sent a messenger to him, saying, go and wash in the Jordan 7 times, and your flesh shall be restored to you, and you shall be clean. What was Naaman's problem physically?
Leprosy.
He had leprosy. But Naaman became furious and went away and said, indeed, I said to myself, he will surely come out to me and stand and call on the name of the Lord his God, right? Not my God, and wave his hand over the place and heal the leprosy. Are not the Abana and Parphar, the rivers of Damascus, better than all the waters of Israel? Could I not wash in them and be clean? So he turned away, he turned and went away in his rage. And his servants came near and spoke to him and said, my father, if the prophet had told you to do something great, would you have not have done it? How much more then when he says to you, wash and be clean? So he went down and dipped 7 times in the Jordan according to the saying of the man of God, and his flesh was restored like the flesh of a little child, and he was clean. When you look at Naaman, Naaman believes that the only way he's going to get clean is how? Through who? The prophet. Who is the prophet of who?
God.
He knows that only by the power of God will he be clean. Now, how can I say that I think he believes that? Because he's traveled. He's got a whole bunch of people. He's sitting here saying, I have a problem, and I think the only one who can fix this is God. And how do I get to God? Because I don't have a great relationship with God. How do I get to God? I get to God by going to the man of God. And I need to get to Elisha and see if God will help me. But I understand who God is to some extent. I understand enough, again, to your point, a couple weeks ago, you don't understand everything about God, but he understands enough to believe, I believe in God. I mean, I believe in this God. I understand and I believe in him to the point that it's moving me. My first action is, I'm going to go. And I show up on this guy's door. Now, would we say that Naaman is a deep man of faith?
No.
I mean, no. He's got all kinds of problems, right? He's got a pride problem. You know, he has all kinds of an attitude problem. He doesn't fully understand everything. But he knows he needs to obey God. Go dip 7 times. Does he do it?
Not immediately, but eventually.
Not immediately.
But he does it. How many people do we teach Bible that immediately do what you ask them?
That's right. There's a whole lot of things immediately we don't do, or we don't understand, or we resist, or this is ridiculous, or I don't understand why we should have to do this or have to do that. But over time, some of us get there quicker than others, and you figure it out, and you're like, okay, I'll do it. And when he moved to action, he was put in touch with the power of God. My point here is, it doesn't take monumental things to be in God's favor. Sometimes as Christians, we make it like, you know, you've got to be. No, you need to understand enough to know what you need to be doing. You need to believe in God, and you need to move. Okay? Start doing. You don't have to be perfect. That's what the grace of Christ is for, the amazing grace that we sing about. Sometimes we think, oh, you know, well, I didn't do this perfect, and I didn't do that perfect, and I don't know if I'm going to make it to heaven, or I'm not going to make it. It's like, you're going to get moved. Okay? He blessed Naaman, who had a temper tantrum out there just 20 minutes earlier. Okay? Because he did what the prophet told him.
I was thinking about his wise counsel and those servants, because what if the servants said, yeah, this is crazy.
Like, let's go. Yeah. I just want to hit that point over and over again. You know, we are told that we can know if we're saved. Do you understand enough to know that Jesus is the Son of God? Do you believe he's the Son of God? Have you been baptized? Have you done, and are you trying to do the things that he's asked you to do? If you're doing these things right here and you have an action faith, you're walking in the light. You're trying and you're moving. But when we settle and we get complacent and we're like, well, no, I believe, but I haven't been doing anything. Well, then that's a problem. Because if you love me, you'll keep my commandments. You need to keep moving. You need to get up. I know you got knocked down. I know you messed that up. Yeah, you're a train wreck. Get up and keep going. That's enough. It's enough. Right? Now, I'm not saying, you know, and I know that you need to keep going, because in Hebrews it says, well, in the time that you ought to be teachers, if you kept getting up and kept getting up, kept getting up, you have enough life experience to go help some other people. Right? But now you've done nothing. You're like the one talent man that just dumped it in the sand and did nothing. Well, that's not action. Jody?
Well, the one talent man didn't try, the reason he didn't fall. If you try, you're going to make mistakes. But the big lesson also in Naaman's case is the fact that God provides his gift upon the completion of the required task, always. And so when Naaman did, he didn't get cleansed on the first year, but the second year. But
yeah.
On the Sabbath, when you finish doing what God had asked you to do, then you receive the blessing. And so it is with life. If you continue doing what God has asked you to do, at the end, you will receive the crown of life.
Yeah. Romans, 2, I mean, Revelation 2:10. Right?
That marked from, I guess, from somebody's sermon over some point of the years at verse 10, opposite verse 10, I've got it. It just says simple instruction. That's exactly what we're talking about, just a simple little instruction. And then at 13 and 14, beside it, I've got, it's not always a big show.
It's not always a big show. And I...
I
just want, I want that to sink in for each of us, because the killer to Christian faith is what? And it's what Jesus accused Peter of when he started to sink. Oh, ye of little faith, why did you doubt? Doubt is the Christian kryptonite. Okay? And if you're going to sit there and doubt, well, I don't know if I'm saved, or I don't know if I'm good enough, or I don't, well, you're not good enough.
None of us would be good enough.
And you're not going to be good enough. You don't have to be good enough. Look at Naaman. Okay? What great, you know, amazing person was the eunuch? Now, it's great that he was studying, but I mean, have you ever studied your Bible for half an hour? I mean, he was enough. He believed. We have to keep actioning. We have to keep moving and keep doing. You'll get there. The Bible teaches us that God doesn't want any man to what? Perish. But that all should have what?
Everlasting
life. That's why he sent his own begotten son, we're told. John 3:16, that everyone likes to quote. But do we believe it? He's not here to... He just wants to know, show me you love me. Keep trying. Just do what I'm saying. Keep going. Don't give up. Now, this is where most of us live. And there's going to be times when we're going to doubt a little bit, and then we'll believe, and then we'll, you know, or I don't understand something. So on a lot of topics, right, this is back and forth, back and forth. It's not like you get here and you've arrived, okay? So... You know, it's back and forth, or, oh, I didn't even know I needed to be concerned about that part. Oh, okay, well, let me learn more now. I understand. Oh, I get it. Well, now I'll behave differently. Right? This is all over. Okay? We're building our faith, building our faith. This is how you test your faith and you build your faith. What I want to suggest to you this morning is there are some Christians who have faith that some of us, we may never, ever experience. And it's a faith that we'll study now, which I'm calling a knowing faith. It's a faith that for me is hard to wrap my head around. It doesn't mean that if I don't have it, I'm lost. It just means that it's a faith like others haven't seen before. It's another level of faith that we should all aspire to try to get to. Turn with me to Luke 7. Luke 7, if someone doesn't mind reading, it's 10 verses, but it's there's no scary names in there. So Luke 7, 1 through 10, if you're feeling extroverted, go for it.
Now when he had concluded all his sayings in the hearing of the people, he entered Capernaum. The centurion's servant, who was dear to him, was sick and ready to die. So when he heard about Jesus, he sent elders of the Jews to him, pleading with him to come and heal his servant. And when they came to Jesus, they begged him earnestly, saying that the one for whom he should do this was deserved, for he loves our nation and has built us a synagogue. Then Jesus went with them, and when he was already not far from the house, the centurion sent friends to him, saying to him, Lord, do not trouble yourself, for I am not worthy that you should enter under my roof. Therefore, I did not even think myself worthy to come to you. But say the word, and my servant will be healed. For I also am a man placed under authority, having soldiers under me. And I say to one, go, and he goes. And to another, come, and he comes. And to my servant, do this, and he does it. When Jesus heard these things, he marveled at him, and turned around and said to the crowd that followed him, I say to you, I have not found such great faith, not even in Israel. And those who were sent, returning to the house, found the servant well who had been sick.
Okay. Thank you. So we have a centurion here, and what was his situation?
He had a sick servant.
Now I'll tell you, it shows a little bit about the heart of this leader that he's got a servant who's sick and he's this concerned about his servant. I mean, that in and of itself shows you a little bit of his heart. So what does he do? He sends people out, and he sends people out to find who?
Jesus.
Is he aware of Jesus?
Yes.
Now, I don't know. He's aware. He's heard something. And what he's heard, he understands that Jesus can do what?
Heal.
He can heal this guy or gal. He can heal this servant. Okay? He believes it.
Yes, or he wouldn't send him.
So he sends them. And Jesus what? Starts coming. And then what happens? As Jesus is walking towards his home and he's not that far away from him, what happens? The centurion does what? Sends his servants back and tells Jesus what?
No need to come to my house.
I'm not worthy. I'm not worthy. So first you see his humility. He said, because that's why I didn't even come to you to ask in the first place, because I'm not worthy. You think about, does he understand who he's talking to? I mean, he understands, he believes that this is the Son of God. It's like, I'm not showing my face in front of the Son of God. I mean, I'm not worthy. You think Jesus knows this? He can feel this? He understands this about this individual? Of course he does. And then he tells him what? He says, you don't need to come any closer because what? What do you just need to do? You just speak it and it'll happen because I know how authority works. I have authority. And I know you have authority. We have authority over different things. I have authority over men. And when I tell them go here, go there, what happens? They get up and they go. I know what you have authority over. Just speak it. And it'll happen. And what does verse 9 say? What was Jesus' response? Before that, what was that?
Marveled.
He marveled. Now let me tell you, you think about having faith that causes Jesus to marvel at you. let's not miss that. I mean, Jesus was stopped in his tracks. And he marveled at the faith. How many times have you heard Jesus say, "Oh, ye of little faith, how much longer do I have to bear with you people?" Even his disciples at times, "Are you kidding me?" Here's a man that's a centurion who hasn't spent any time with Jesus, who has this level of faith, and it stops Jesus, and he's marveled at this. I mean, think about puzzling and marveling the Son of God with your faith. To where he turns around to everyone and he just has to say, I've not seen faith like this even in Israel. This is a knowing faith. There was no doubt in this man's mind who Jesus was and his power and what he could do, and you just speak it. "I'm not even worthy to be seen of you. I don't even want you to come into my house because I know your awesomeness. I know your power." Right? We got people walking around Jesus and, you know, there's a pilot who looked at him and said, "Do you know who I am? You're not going to talk to me? Do you know who I am? Do you know the power I have?" The centurion, he had knowing faith. Flip to Hebrews 11. Hebrews 11, 17. Someone read 17 through 19. Hebrews 11, 17 through 19.
"By faith, Abraham, when he was tried, offered up Isaac. And he that had received the promises offered up his only begotten son, of whom it was said that in Isaac shall thy seed be called, accounting that God was able to raise him up even from the dead, from whence also he received him in a figure."
Okay. That's good. Thank you. So we know this is referencing the account where Abraham was about to do what? He was going to sacrifice his son. Okay? Now, go back, study all the Abraham stuff, and Abraham was getting old, Sarah was getting old. They're like, "Hey, we got to come up with plan B because I don't know what God's waiting on," right? And they try to do something else, and God's like, no. "That's not how we're going to do it." Okay? Isaac finally comes along, and it says here in verse 18, "Of whom it was said, in Isaac your seed shall be called." God told Abraham, it's going to be Isaac. He turns around and says, "You need to go sacrifice Isaac." And Abraham, does Abraham believe that it's going to be Isaac that's going to fulfill? That his seed will, you know, be called? Yeah. He knows, God told me it was Isaac, and now he's telling me to sacrifice Isaac.
Ultimately, he believes in God. In 19, it says, he knows God can raise up Isaac.
So, he's got a story. I mean, God can raise him up. That must be his plan. I don't know what God's plan is, but I'm thinking he can raise him from the dead. Because he told me it's going to be Isaac. And I believe him. And he takes his son and is ready to sacrifice his own son. Now, to be able to do that, is this a, I hope God knows what he's doing kind of a faith?
No.
I mean, do we think that Abraham didn't like Isaac and he's thinking this kid never cleans his room anyway and, you know, I can make another one? No. I mean, this is his future. This is his legacy. And he's about ready to kill his son. This is a knowing faith. I know. This isn't a, well, Lord, if it's your will. And there's nothing wrong with, Lord, if it's your will. But let me tell you, there's a difference between praying, Lord, if it's your will, and we'll talk about that at some point, and praying, I know you're going to do this. It's only been a few times in my life, but I've been able to pray a few times, I know. It's almost like a challenge to God. I know you're going to make this happen for me. Every time I've done it, he has.
My question is, why did the centurion, if he had all this faith and knew that Jesus could heal, why wasn't it just a prayer? Why did he have to have it physically come to him? Why didn't he just pray for it?
I mean, he could pray, or you can get Jesus that's down the road. I mean, I don't know. He's in town.
I mean, I didn't really know because he sent everybody out to find him.
So. Yeah, I don't know. I can't answer that question.
So that we can have the example to read about and talk about today.
Yeah, I mean, I can't answer. You know, I can't answer that question. I don't have that. But Abraham had a knowing faith. Let me tell you, that's another level of faith beyond. I'm just going to do and hope, you know, and I know things will work out. Yeah.
Abraham demonstrated that all the way through the story. He got up very early the next morning to go.
That's right.
He didn't wait around to think about it any. When he got to the mountain where God pointed, he told the young men, y'all stay here. Me and the boys are going to go up and we'll come back to you. All the evidence is there all the way through. That Abraham trusted and believed in God, and therefore he left in God's hands.
That's right. Turn to 1 Samuel 17:33. 1 Samuel 17:33. And Saul said to David, you are not able to go against this Philistine to fight him, for you're a youth. And he is a man of war from his youth. But David said to Saul, your servant used to keep his father's sheep. And when a lion or a bear came and took a lamb out of the flock, I went out after it and struck it and delivered the lamb from its mouth. And when it arose against me, I caught it by its beard and struck it and killed it. Your servant has killed both lion and bear. And this uncircumcised Philistine will be like one of them, seeing he has defied the armies of the living God. Moreover, David said, the Lord who delivered me from the paw of the lion and from the paw of the bear, he will deliver me from the hand of this Philistine. And Saul said to David, go, and the Lord be with you. Now, what kind of faith did David have? Was there any doubt in David's mind if God was going to deliver him that day? You look at verse 45 in that same chapter. David said to the Philistine, you come to me with a sword and a spear and with a javelin, but I come to you in the Lord, in the name of the Lord of hosts, the God of the armies of Israel, whom you have defiled. This day the Lord will deliver you into my hand, and I will strike you and take your head from you. And this day I will give you the carcasses of the camp to the Philistines, to the birds of the air, and to the wild beasts of the earth, that all the earth may know that there is a God in Israel. Right? And he goes on to say, for the battle is the Lord's, and he will give you into our hands. David had a knowing faith. And how did David have a knowing faith? And there was no doubt in David's mind what's going to happen here. Did God whisper to him and say, hey, I'm tapping you on the shoulder, like he did Moses and some of the others, and say, you need to get down there and fight this Philistine? Did God do that?
No.
No. I mean, he didn't have a vision. God didn't tell him to go do this. How did he get this level of faith? He tells us how.
Things that happened before.
Because he's tested God before. We can get here by testing our faith. Take on a challenge. Give God the challenge. He's like, this is a man. I mean, we get to a greater level of faith by walking with God, with testing God. If you never test your faith, if you never put yourself out there, you never know how great God can be in your life. Now, does that mean we're lost? No. That means we have further to go in our faith. If we want to challenge ourselves, we could be bigger. You know, there's a 10-talent man and there's a 5-talent man. Not all of us are 10-talent people, but it doesn't mean that we couldn't be. Some of the reasons are is because we don't push it. We don't test our faith. Jody Chisholm.
David said, "The Lord will deliver me." David didn't say, "I will come out here and I will kill you."
Oh, yeah.
He said, "The Lord God will do
this." Oh, he was clear.
And so sometimes we get to thinking more highly of ourselves than we ought to. You know, Paul said he preached, but God gives the increase. The work that we do and accomplish is by the grace of God and by the power of God that you are able to do those things.
Yep. Tori.
I think it's important in all of this, to like you're talking about with testing, is to acknowledge what that test is for you. For some of us, it's legitimate life or death situations that God gets us out of, and we grow from that, and it makes us more comfortable the next time. But you have to figure out what that is for you. What is that big thing? What can be that push for you in your circumstances? Because we all, you know, whether it's our daily walk, our careers, whatever it is, we all are going to hit different levels of that. But be open-minded enough to see when God is there to get you through it.
That's right. So we don't have time. We're at the end. And I'm not going to be here next Sunday. I just apologize. I thought it was going to be better. May's just a train wreck for me. And I was sick last week. So, but I want you to think about Elijah and with the prophets of Baal. You go read that, which we would have in 1 Kings 18. God didn't tap him on the shoulder and go, "Hey, go down there." And I mean, he's standing there, one man, with all these people who can crush him like a grape, and he's even mocking them at some level. "Hey, where's your God? Is he asleep? Is he?" I mean, he knows that God is going to do this. And he tells God so that they may know, just like David did, that they may know that there's no other God, that you are the God of Israel. Elijah says the same thing, that they may know who you are. When we pray and we challenge God, "God, I've messed up my life," or "I don't know how to do this," fix it so that people around me know. Not that I'm so great that things turned out, but that you can heal. That you're enough. That this is you working in me. And that fire came down and just licked up the water and everything. I mean, that is knowing faith. To stand there in the midst of all those people. Wasn't like the ark, even where God said, "Hey, go do this." I mean, he knows. But then what happens? He gets afraid of Jezebel. What happens? He takes off and he runs in the mountains. But my point is, we go back and forth. You have moments. You can have moments. You can have a moment of a knowing faith, and you may not have it all the time. Okay? But we have to stay in action. And action faith is important. Okay. Sorry I didn't get through everything. We just got a ton of... But doubt is the killer. If you look in Matthew, Jesus says we need to ask. When he says, if you ask, not doubting, you can move this mountain from here to there. Doubt is the killer. Don't doubt. Just trust. Believe, trust in God, and good things will happen. Thanks for your... participation.